Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. In today's Trump World and Russia headlines, Russia recalls the lightning rod U.S. Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. Former Trump campaign advisor Carter Page reveals he was interviewed for 10 hours by the FBI. Trump seems to acknowledge now that Russia hacked the election, but only as a way of knocking Obama. And the political world is still buzzing about last week's Washington Post story describing how Obama didn't do all he might have about Russia as soon as he knew. Joining me now to discuss the details of that report and other unfolding Trusha-related details are Julia Yaffe, national security and foreign policy reporter for The Atlantic, and Maggie Haberman, White House correspondent for The New York Times. Welcome back, Julia and Maggie. Hi.
Hi, thank you.
And let me start with this breaking news about Sergei Kislyak, Moscow's top diplomat in the United States. He's been a central figure, as we know, in suspicions about Donald Trump world connections with Russia. His name keeps popping up as the ones that all these people who didn't reveal the meetings at first are revealed to have met with, Jeff Sessions and Kislyak, Jared Kushner and Kislyak, et cetera, Michael Flynn, too. And now it's confirmed Kislyak is returning to his country after almost a decade in the job. Julia, do you know why?
Well, actually, he was supposed to leave. I mean, his term was up, and even before he, you know, every American found out about Ambassador Sour Patch, as I like to call him, because his last name means sour in Russian, he was supposed to leave, and Moscow has been vetting his replacement for months before he kind of entered the American news cycle. So this just is coincidental timing. His replacement looks to be so somebody like Kislyak, it's not clear to what extent he is affiliated with the Secret Services, to what extent he's a true diplomat. You know, the distinction is kind of hazy with him. His replacement is actually very overtly affiliated with the Russian security services. He wears a uniform, has epaulets, medals, etc.
Maggie, anything to add about maybe the legacy of Kislyak in relation to the whole Trump world and Russia investigations or even beyond?
Sure. I mean, look, I couldn't speak to as knowledgeably as Julia can about Mr. Kislyak, but his legacy is that his name is going to continue to come up in a series of investigations, both by the FBI and by congressional officials looking into what happened with the Trump campaign and whether there was any collusion with Russia in terms of meddling into the 2016 election. So he might be gone, but he will hardly be forgotten.
And Julia, was Kislyak, uniquely aggressive or involved in intrigue in the way his name keeps coming up with these contacts would seem to indicate, or was he just doing the things that a good ambassador does, and that's why we now know his name? That's why he was involved with so many incoming officials and potentially incoming officials.
I think so. I think both are true. I think he was a very aggressive socializer and sought out meetings with as many people in the, you know, Washington establishment as he could. I've run into him at dinners before. He, for example, hosted a giant, very festive dinner at his, at the residence right up the street from the White House, for Michael McFaul and the incoming National Security Council staff for the Obama administration in the fall of 2008. So he makes himself available, makes himself, he puts himself out there. And when Vladimir, I hate to say this, but when Vladimir Putin is right, when he says, he's an ambassador, what's he supposed to do? In some ways, It's interesting that he has become such a lightning rod. It kind of mirrors what happened to Michael McFaul when he was ambassador to Russia under the Obama administration. He became a massive lightning rod there because he was seen as having been sent by the Americans to stir up unrest and to bring color revolution, because he's an expert in democracy promotion and color revolutions. He was seen as a kind of a CIA agent bringing color revolution to Moscow. So there were pro-Kremlin youth groups staging, you know, die-ins in front of the American embassy. The Kremlin news channels would videotape everybody going in and out of his residence. So he also, it's interesting how the two, how the even the ambassadors of these two countries doing what they're supposed to do as ambassadors have become, you know, given the distrust between Washington and Moscow, how the ambassadors have also come in for a lot of fire.
Did you say the replacement for Kislyak, the next ambassador, is going to be a military official in uniform?
All his official pictures are in uniform. I'm not sure that he's a military official, but he's connected to the security services. So in a way that is far more overt than Kislyak.
Huh. So if he's walking around Washington wearing epaulets and everything, it's going to be harder going to be harder for Jeff Sessions to forget that he hung out with him at the Mayflower Hotel.
I don't know. You've seen pictures of Kislyak. I don't know how you forget a face like that.
Maggie, your latest article had to do with Donald Trump's changing relationship with the fact, if we can presume it is a fact, that Russia hacked the election last year. The latest tweet making the rounds in response to that big Washington Post story about Obama last week referred to, Obama knew about Russia meddling in the elections and didn't do anything. But that acknowledges that Russia meddled in the elections.
Right. I mean, there's double disingenuousness there, right? Because it's not as if Trump just learned this. It was known during the election that Russia was believed to have been behind this. It just was not stated as unequivocally at the time by the administration, the Obama administration, and not as forcefully. But Hillary Clinton certainly raised it in the debates. That's what evoked that response from Trump in the first debate that, you know, you don't know it was Russia. It might have been some guy sitting on his bed weighing 400 pounds, which remains one of his most memorable quotes in a series of them. But look, I mean, Trump has been inconsistent at best on this. And as you said earlier, the only times that he has decided to state flatly that it was Russia was if it's a chance to ding his predecessor for how he dealt with it. And this lack of consistency is frustrating a lot of his allies, even Republicans in Congress, who see it stalling. You know, it's not just that the Russia, you know, mushroom cloud sort of, you know, lingers over everything they're trying to do right now and has gummed up the gears and distracted the president. It has also forestalled a lot of decision making on everything from Syria policy to how exactly they're going to shore up the election systems in various states. There's a bunch of officials in states who say there has been a benign interest at best by the federal government in making sure that the systems are secure for 2018 and 2020. And this is where the fact that the president frequently conflates himself with the institutions he serves is problematic.
Here is Trump on Sunday's Fox and Friends on Obama's knowledge of Russian interference in the 2016 election.
Well, I just heard today for the first time that Obama knew about Russia a long time before the election, and he did nothing about it. But nobody wants to talk about that. That the CIA gave him information on Russia a long time before they even, you know, before the election. And I hardly see it. It's an amazing thing to me, you know. In other words, the question is, if he had the information, why didn't he do something about it? He should have done something about it.
So that's an example of the double disingenuousness you were just referring to, I guess, Maggie.
Exactly.
But if somebody were to ask Trump today or Sean Spicer today, based on what Trump said on Fox and Friends on Sunday, does he now acknowledge that Russia meddled in the election? What would they say?
They would say what they've been saying, what you saw Sean Spicer say in an off-camera gaggle on Friday, and then what I think he said again yesterday, which was The president has said it was probably Russia, but it may have been other countries, too. The president said that once when he was still the president-elect in January, and he has not said that again. But, you know, this president has he's not a Wall Street titan. He's a real estate deals guy, and he treats everything, no matter what it is, as if it is some open-ended negotiation. And that is how he has approached this. It is, you know, what is convenient for him at that moment is how he treats it. And that's very, very dangerous when you are dealing with matters of national security, which is what this is.
And Julie Yaffe from The Atlantic, what exactly did President Obama know last summer, and how did he find out? Did The Washington Post give us a lot of new information on that in their Friday article?
They did. It kind of mirrors, it largely mirrors my own reporting, which is by the end of the summer, this word was starting to leak in. Well, they were starting to get word from the intelligence community that this was happening. And it was basically a multi-pronged attack. They were poking and scanning the state election infrastructure, the voter rolls, the machines, and there was also the hacking, the dumping. Then there was information. Then there was the fake news mill. And so, as they were trying to figure out what to do about this, you know, it's the slow, deliberative way that was so classic of the Obama administration. The attack kept going. So there was a natural lag, which did not redound to the Obama administration's benefit. And, there weren't a lot of good options, especially when then-candidate Donald Trump was already out there saying the election's going to be rigged. So the Obama administration was afraid of it, of the political backlash if they, you know, weighed in on this. And, you know, having spoken to Obama administration officials, they were afraid that, you know, doing anything would be too much. And they, you know, they tried to calibrate their response as much as they could. The problem is, and with the information that they had and the information that they had that was verified, the problem is that was very much too little too late. And if they had had the information they had in the winter, if they were able to get a report out like the DNI report that came out in January of 2017, I think it would have been a whole different ballgame, because that report kicked up so much political dust, triggered all kinds of investigations, both in Congress and in the press, and has basically firmly affixed this gray Russian cloud above the Trump administration that won't budge.
And last Wednesday, at a Senate Intelligence Committee hearing, Obama's Homeland Security Secretary, Jay Johnson, really kind of admitted that they withheld making a big deal about this because of political concerns during the campaign. Here he is.
One of the candidates, as you recall, was predicting that the election was going to be rigged in some way. And so we were concerned that by making the statement, we might in and of itself be challenging the integrity of the election process itself.
Jay Johnson last week. Maggie, that is such an infuriating paradox, because really, since Trump was just making up out of whole cloth that the election was being rigged, Trump's lie prevented Obama from telling the truth.
Yes, and look, I mean, I think that I agree with how you framed it, that this is an infuriating paradox if you were the Obama people. I do think it is fair for President Trump to raise the question of why Obama didn't do more. There are answers, and among them is that there were no great options. There certainly were no perfect options, but it is fair to do. And I think one of the reasons is what you're describing and what Jay Johnson testified to. You know, the problem for the Obama administration is, and I understand why it was hard, because President Trump, you know, manufactured this this unfair event that was coming. And he has a way of doing that. He sort of creates events in the future and then sees if reality ends up catching up with them. I understand that they felt hemmed in by that. But the problem is that, and this I think was the problem with how Democrats as a party dealt with Trump the whole time, and really Republicans too, frankly, is you don't get to choose the race you're in. He was presenting the American democratic system with something it really had not faced before on this broad a scale, and certainly with a nominee. But you have to adjust to what you have in front of you. And I think that it is reasonable for critics of the Obama administration's response to wonder how effectively the administration did that.
We only have a few minutes left, but I want to talk for a minute about how the day of Friday, October 7th, is going to live in political infamy. Somebody probably can write a book called October 7th, 2016, if they want to, as a window into the whole way that this campaign was run and ended. With respect to what we were just talking about, the Obama administration had known since August, but it wasn't until October 7th that they made a public comment on Russia's active measures to influence the election. Then Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson and National Intelligence Director James Clapper issued a three-paragraph statement on October 7th, which confirmed the meddling, though it didn't mention Putin by name. And that statement was timed to be released around 3:30 that Friday afternoon, October 7th, to allow for maximum media coverage. But instead, it was drowned out by a little Washington Post story about crude comments that Trump had made about women captured on the now infamous Access Hollywood tape, which I think came out like a half hour later. And that was also the day of, apparently in response to the Access Hollywood tape being released, that WikiLeaks then dumped its first load of John Podesta emails, including the text of Hillary Clinton's speeches to Goldman Sachs and all this other stuff that they thought would be damaging to Clinton. Maggie, October 7th.
It was quite a day. Look, I remember very well the sequence of events that you're describing. And I remember where I was. And the statement about Russia was a blip. It really was a blip. Mm-hmm. The Access Hollywood tape news was a bomb. And then so was WikiLeaks was sort of a slower roll. It took a little while for it to really take off. It actually, bits and pieces were showing up, but it was not seen as that interesting at first, just in terms of the content. I will say that, again, I hate to keep coming back to this, and news media has to make its own assessment of how to cover things and what to cover. But to the extent that we cover what is in front of us, what Democrats chose to focus on that day was not Russia. I know the Clinton campaign likes to do a revisionist history where they were screaming from the hilltops about Russia. That's not what they did that day, and that's not what they did the next day either. I got a series of phone calls from people very close to the Clinton campaign who were cackling about the Access Hollywood tape on that Saturday, about how much fun they were having with this. And it was a really jarring response because the comments themselves that the current president had made on that tape were disturbing and I think not really worth reveling in. But the Clinton campaign chose to focus all of its attention on Access Hollywood. And they could have done a lot more with Russia as well. But to your point, that was a seminal day.
Julia, what would you like to add?
I completely agree with Maggie. I remember that day. I remember I went into a meeting for an hour and a half. And when I came out, it was, all of these events. And I saw a Clinton staffer that day who was like, oh, it's in the bag. We've got this because of the Access Hollywood tape. What I wanted to say is that the Obama administration's response unwittingly played into the Russian interference and amplified its effect, as did the American media's response, as did the hyperpartisan Republican response. And this is kind of why the Russian approach works so well, even though it's a shoestring operation. It's very ad hoc. It's improvised. It's very low cost, but it works because in the way that, box cutters on an airplane worked on 9/11 and produced a massively asymmetrical effect, a spectacularly asymmetrical effect. And in some ways, this is kind of this is how terrorists work. They use the the rules and the soft spots and the loopholes of a society against itself to further its own ends. So in that case, everything that was happening on October 7th, both in the White House then and in the news media and in the two presidential campaigns, just helped the Russians unwittingly.
Well, sometimes during election campaigns, I say, make your decision by October 1st, because everything after that is going to be gamesmanship. And sure enough, what are we talking about with respect to October 7th? Stories about the Russians trying to hack the election, stories about what Donald Trump did in a tape in a Access Hollywood trailer, what WikiLeaks was trying to get on Hillary Clinton, which means we weren't talking about, and the candidates weren't talking about, healthcare and who's going to make it better, jobs and who's going to bring more, income inequality and who's going to fix that. And instead, it all became political games. And certainly from that point on, after October 7th, 2016. Well, Julia Yaffe, national security and foreign policy reporter for The Atlantic, and Maggie Haberman, White House correspondent for The New York Times, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
For today's edition of Trusha Daily, we will continue this till the end of the month to give you daily updates on what's happening with respect to Trump world and Russia. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, how to fall in love with anyone.